Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 141 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Today, I'm very, very excited to have Karen Hanna with us. Karen is 59 years old, and she has been a sugar and carb addict for well over 50 years. She was put on her first diet at 7 years old, lied about her age to join Weight Watchers at age 14, and has yo-yo dieted her entire life. The irony was that she wasn't overweight as a child, but then she moved to a candy store when she was 13 and feels that really set her firmly on the path for a lifetime of addiction to sugar. She dieted her way up to morbid obesity and type 2 diabetes as an adult. All that changed when she heard about SugarX Global almost a year ago via the Diet Doctor website, where she rewatched Fitton Johnson's videos and joined the Facebook group and heard about a 5-day Crush Your Cravings challenge. She was desperate at that point, as by that time, her diabetes was completely out of control. She was on 3 medications and facing daily injections, and she still couldn't stop eating sugar and carbs, even though she knew they were literally killing her. She binge watched the challenge, and it was like a light bulb went on. She had a breakthrough call with our friend Judy Wolf, and felt like she had come home. She went cold turkey and stopped eating sugar, carbs, grains, seed oils, and sweeteners, and has been abstinent ever since she joined on May 3rd, 2021. Her life has completely changed since then. At her heaviest, a year before joining SugarX, she was over 280 pounds. Now she has gone down 3 dress sizes. She's reversing her diabetes and has managed to stay abstinent for almost a year, despite some very challenging personal circumstances, which we're going to get into. So this is amazing. Welcome, Karen. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Oh, thanks, Siobhan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And almost a year. We're really close to that 1-year mark. You must just be so excited.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
Yeah,
actually, after
feel just kind of like a miracle.
Decades of failed dieting. I thought that, it was too late for me and I was never going to get recovery. So why bother? And then I found SugarX and, my life has changed completely, as you said in the intro.
And this is such, I love this, that it's never too late. It really is. It's never too late to feel good, basically. And you said you've been a sugar and carb addict for well over 50 years. That's a long time. So tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up, as an addict. You mentioned moving to a candy store. That sounds interesting. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, I grew up in a very small village. In fact, it was really just one street. And my grandparents had the pub or bar at the end of the street. And I lived there until I was about 3. And I used to get treats in the pub. My grandparents used to give me, sugary treats, potato chips, pop. Obviously, it was all full sugar in those days. So I grew up kind of equating food with love, I suppose. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents because both my parents worked. My dad was a car mechanic and my mum used to work in the pub. So I spent a lot of time there. And then we moved just along the street. So I still used to go to the pub a lot. And of course, I started to put on weight and I wasn't massively overweight, but in those days, I'm talking about the, early 60s, it was unusual to see an overweight kid. And eventually my mum used to keep trying, you know, to cut me down at home and make me eat sensibly at home. But then I'd just go up the road to Nana and Grandad's and eat, you know, my treats in the pub. So she put me on a diet at 7. And I remember being at school and looking very enviously at the other kids' lunches because they all had nice food. And I just had maybe one sandwich and an apple. And I was, you know, I felt deprived even then at a very early age. And I do remember even being embarrassed to cross the road to the recreation ground in case anyone saw me, because I thought I looked fat in my shorts. And I was literally, you know, under 10 years old at that point, but very self-conscious. And then when my grandparents retired, my parents moved to a sweet shop, we call it in the UK, a candy store. And that was when the binging on sugar really took a hold, because I used to work in the shop every night. It was kind of a shop in a house. So the family lived behind and the shop was in the front room. So every night after school, I would sit in the shop basically eating candy, sweets from the jar, in secret, terrified that my mother would come through and catch me. But that was how I earned my pocket money. And I was so paranoid about being caught. I used to always have to have a school bag with a zip so that I could hide the wrappers in my school bag and dispose of them on the way to school. So that, you know, set up obviously a lot of the guilt and shame around the eating as well. And again, I wasn't huge at that point. I was maybe a size 14. I thought I was enormous. And it was ridiculous because I would be sitting in the shop eating loads of sugar, chocolate, candy of all kinds. And then I'd go through to the back for my meal and my mum would have me on, you know, like fish and salad or the grapefruit and egg diet, all of the fads that were in during the 70s, you know, she tried and she would diet with me. But then I'd just go back in the shop and be sneaking food again. So at age 14, I lied to go to Weight Watchers with my friend who was also overweight. And together, you know, we started a lifetime of diet clubs. And I thought I was huge. One time in a shop, I remember we saw this woman with a badge on saying, "I've lost so many pounds," asking how. And my mother mortified me by going over asking this woman, saying, "Oh, my daughter's got a weight problem, you know. How did you do it?" And that was Herbalife. So we had a go at Herbalife and the silly tablets and shakes. And, you know, I was still a teenager at that point. And I just thought I would die of shame. But all along, it was always, why can't I diet? Why can't I do this? What's wrong with me? And not feeling acceptable in my own body, even though I would kill to have that body back these days, you know. It's just a really difficult time for anyone in the teens. And that was before the days of social media. So, you know, how young girls and young women cope with things these days, I just feel so sorry for them because everything is in the public domain, you know.
I think about that a lot, how hard that would be to struggle with something like this and then have that added pressure of the social media. And just so grateful that that wasn't around. And I also can't help but be, it's like that addict still in me is like a little jealous that you lived in a candy shop. Like, I'm surprised that was my reaction, but I was like, man, that would have been such, can't even imagine that for you. So, and that makes me so sad that, you know, cause my daughter's about to turn 7 now. So thinking of like her being on a diet or even feeling at that age, like she was unhappy in her body or like overweight at all. Do you think that came from messaging from other people or was it? Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
There was a lot of criticism within the family that they used to call me Bonnie, which really means overweight. And, you know, that also set up a lifetime of overachievement because I was really good at school. But there was a lot of bullying because I was clever and I was a bit overweight. And my grandparents had a business From a very early age, I was bullied as well. And that didn't help with feeling different and out of it and wanting to isolate. And that was really when the food became the comfort. And there was also a lot of arguing at home, which I thought was normal. My parents stayed together for 60 years until my dad died recently, but it wasn't particularly a happy family atmosphere. There was a lot of anger and shouting and a lot of, we call it pandering in the UK, but a lot of, making sure dad was okay. Don't make dad shout, behave, be a good person. And to stuff all these feelings down, I found that food worked for me. So I would isolate, I would go around to the pub and sit and read a book with something in my hands, eating while reading, getting a bit of peace. And that kind of set up that early kind of reward system as well. And obviously I never realized, it would develop into a lifelong addiction. It was just something I did. But it's that thing where you shouldn't be eating it because it makes you put on weight, which is the thing you fear the most, but you can't stop. And that was a pattern that repeated my whole life, really.
So even, then you're a teenager, you're going to Weight Watchers, you start this kind of dieting, cycle. And yeah, tell us a little bit more like what life looked like after that, as this progressed, as we know, addiction is a progressive disease. So what did that kind of look like?
To be honest, I kind of lost a couple of decades. I'll be really honest about that. Because it was just an endless cycle of yo-yo dieting. I was either on a diet or I was off a diet. When I went to university, I left home when I was 18 and went to university, and I didn't know how to eat properly because I'd always been, even up to that age, on a diet or off a diet. So, of course, I couldn't feed myself, healthy meals. I didn't know what a decent portion size was. So I carried on eating the junk food. And I met my husband at university, and he basically became a bit of a binge buddy for me. I moved around the country a lot for work because when I graduated in the mid 80s, it was quite difficult to find a job. So I moved around the country. We got married when I was in my mid-20s, and I did the usual, dieted to get married and got into a smaller wedding dress. But of course, the minute the wedding was over, I went back to normal eating and, put all the weight back on again. And really during my 30s and 40s, it was a blur of, spiraling weight, dieting, losing it, gaining it back even more, tried every diet and therapy going. The only thing I didn't do was get surgery, because it wasn't really available in those days. And during all this time, you're asking before, was it something internal or external? I was constantly being criticized within the family, you'd be lovely if you just lost some weight. From a very early age, my grandmother in particular used to give me the food in one hand, but then be criticizing me on the other hand. So it was very confusing. So it was like they wanted to give me treats, but then somehow it was my fault that I was gaining weight. And I've always had this kind of ambivalent feeling, towards the food and the weight. And it became as if food somehow, although it was a comfort, it was also a punishment. And there was a lot of rebellion in me, even as an adult, that, now I was successful at work. I've been successful in many other fields, but I could never get the weight under control. And part of me was kind of, I've done all this. I can eat what I want now. But I was still getting the criticism from within the family until very, very recently. And my mum in particular has always kind of encouraged me to try and lose weight. And it's like I'm more acceptable when I'm dieting somehow. It's just really strange. I've never quite got to the bottom of it. But, you know, the one thing about being in recovery now is even though I'm still substantially overweight, I am so much more happy within myself. And I feel much more acceptable because I am who I am, not what I look like. And it's taken me many, many years, you know, and I'm still learning about acceptance of myself for who I am, you know. And it doesn't matter what size I am, it's about the kind of person I am these days. And I think I've wasted so much of my life trying to fit some kind of unrealistic ideal of what I should look like, how much I should weigh. And it's, you know, it's heartbreaking really when I look back. But then again, go back to the hope piece, you know, things are different now and things will be different going forward. So I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, I think that summarizes so much for so many people that feel that same way, like so much time was lost, you know, not loving their bodies. And, or even like, you know, you were saying when you think back, you were like a size 14. Yeah, you'd love to be that now. I remember the same thing, like when I thought I was overweight in high school and I look at pictures now and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, it's so funny, you know, like in hindsight, but it makes me, yeah, it's so sad that you were basically kind of set up to fail. You know, that's just such a clear picture of being criticized and giving candy at the same time, you know, such mixed messaging, you know, and that's just so, so confusing, especially for a child, but for anyone. And then just to feel, how are you to feel safe and secure within your own body if that's not what you're being told by those, you know, people that are supposed to support you and love you the most. So yeah, I am so glad. I think that's one of the biggest, you know, as when, and when I look at the benefits of being sugar and flour free, you know, I've talked about this before, I am grateful for my weight loss, but more than that is this type of thing that you're talking about. You know, that's the real freedom, is that acceptance. And, you know, how do you feel now if you are being criticized? Is it a different, like, you know, I'm sure at the time when you're criticized, you take it in, but I think there comes a point then when you do accept yourself, there's some boundaries up around you where it just doesn't affect you the same.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny because since I started SugarX, obviously my grandparents are no longer here, but my mum has become very quiet on the subject of my appearance because I do look different now. But I kind of don't get into the conversation. I don't feel I have to justify anymore what I'm eating and why I'm eating it. I'm doing what I feel is right for me, and I'm getting the correct support from the correct community, because I think that's the difference, is only people who have this addiction are recovering from it understand what it's really like. I have tried to kind of explain to my mother, and I just remembered, you know, one of the things Judy says is shake your family tree and a load of addicts fall out. And of course, my dad was an alcoholic, which was never mentioned. It was just taken as the norm. My mum is a sugar addict and nicotine addict. My grandfather gambled and drank. My grandmother, you know, had a problem with food. So it was kind of all around me. It was fairly inevitable, really. Sorry, I've lost my thread.
No, I think that's so true, though, is that like when you finally, I think, you know, when you were emailing me some stuff, you had also said like you finally understood that it was, you know, your brain having that wonky wiring, you know. Absolutely. It's not your fault, you know, especially when you looked at your background, like I love that. I haven't heard Judy say that, shake a tree. It's so true, you know? And then when you can look at that, it's just, instead of feeling that guilt and shame, I think you can feel a lot more compassion and love for yourself. Cause it's like, yeah, I, you know, of course this was going to happen. So, yeah, I'm really glad that you're able to, you know that now, because I do think it really, really is, helps with that level of healing that we all feel as we go through this journey, and especially the healing with our relationship with ourselves, Because I mean, I just loathed myself. I mean, for years and years and years. And now it's like, I just want to find that little Siobhan and hug her, you know, and give her a hug and tell her it's going to be okay. So yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more. You mentioned like you went through, you know, some pretty big challenges over the past year, and you've been able to stay abstinent throughout. So maybe first, tell us, you know, a little bit about, you know, SugarX and how that all clicked for you, you know, like what all kind of came together for you and gave you the courage to give up sugar and flour and seed oils and grains and sweeteners. I mean, that's so intimidating to so many people. I know for me, like, I just didn't want to give it up. So what was that final, like, I call it kind of the final piece of the puzzle that just kind of clicked into place where you realized, yep, I have to do this and I can do it?
Yeah, I think things started kind of falling apart more about 10 years ago. Actually, that was the start of the kind of final downward spiral, if you like. And a series of events happened in this, I'm talking about my late 40s, you know, into my 50s. I got made redundant after a lifetime of working, which was a huge shock because I'd always defined myself on, you know, the job I did. Because of having the weight issue, I was kind of driven to over-succeed, you know, and that was the start of all the perfectionism and all of that, you know, that's something else. But then I finally found another job and it didn't work out and I was asked to leave. And that's the first time that has ever happened to me in my life. So I had a period of unemployment. And then I got another job. I had a hysterectomy. About 5 years ago, I got a brain injury due to a massive spike in blood pressure. And they still don't know what caused it. And I'm convinced it was my weight and, you know, all the junk I was eating. But I was in a coma for a few days and managed to come out of that. But then my dad was, when I came out of hospital, my dad was dying of bone cancer. So he died a couple of months afterwards and I was supporting my mum. And then, of course, everything just hit me. And I just had a bit of a mental collapse, really, and was off work for a while. And I was working at an eating distress charity, an eating disorder charity, which was actually quite triggering and very stressful. And during all this time, my diabetes was getting even worse because I was diagnosed in February 2009 with type 2, which I felt was self-inflicted. And my blood sugar, as I said, as you said in the intro, was just spiraling out of control. And by this point last year, I was on three medications. My blood sugar was still out of control and I couldn't get it down. And they said to me, look, if you can't improve it by what you're eating, you're going to have to go on daily injections. And I just thought, oh, my God, that's it. So I've been a member of the Diet Doctor website for about 2 years. And I kind of dipped in and out, you know, and I'd done the usual thinking, oh, yeah, I can eat the keto treats and all of that, you know, trying to eat the stuff that I knew harmed me, thinking it was healthier. But of course, I couldn't do it. And I thought, right, this is it. I've got to give it one last go. So I'd kind of signed up to do the 2 week challenge with Diet Doctor. And through that, I watched the Bitten Johnson videos again, which I'd seen before, but for some reason this time it clicked. Because originally I'd thought she was just advocating 12-step programs and I'd already been in a 12-step food program, which had worked to some extent, but I hadn't understood about addiction. And I just thought, oh, well, if I keep off the white flour and the actual sugar, I'll be fine. And of course, I was still eating loads of carbs, which, you know, sugar in the body, da-da. But that had completely passed me by. But for some reason this time, it clicked. And I joined her Sugar Bomb in Your Brain Facebook page. And through that, I heard about this thing called the 5-Day Challenge. And I'd missed it. But I managed to watch it. on catch up because they left the videos up for like a weekend. And I literally sat at the computer and binge watched the whole 5 days in about 2 or 3 days. And then I thought, well, what have I got to lose? And I made the breakthrough call with Judy. And it just felt like, oh my God, this woman really understands what I'm talking about, you know? And that feeling of not having to explain. And I had experienced some of that in the 12-step program. But I realized now I was just dieting with support there. And it was too restricted. And the thing with SugarX was, for me, it was the best of the 12-step stuff, which was all about, you know, principles and respect and acceptance. But the missing piece was all the science and the biology and the brain stuff, what was going on. And that's when I truly realized it wasn't a moral issue. I wasn't a weak, stupid person who'd never been able to crack dieting. That was the wrong treatment for someone like me who was actually a sugar addict, which I kind of realized, you know, after the challenge and talking to Judy. But then that was confirmed when I did the sugar assessment with Anna. And that's when I could see my whole lifetime was as a sugar addict, you know. And I thought, God, no wonder I couldn't diet and moderate. I always thought it was me being weak-willed. And, you know, that's really what changed. And I thought, right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to put the junk down. And I knew I couldn't do the softly, softly, because I can't moderate. So I thought it's either, you know, all or nothing. So I thought, right, I'm going to just put it down no matter what it takes. I've been abstinent before and I've got to do this. And, you know, basically that's what I did. I just went to as many meetings as I could. I was reading stuff that they talked about. I was listening to what I was told, that information doesn't equal transformation, because that's what I do. When I find a problem, you know, I'd always tried to think my way out of this, thinking, well, you know, oh, this will be the right program now. But for once, I just thought, no, this makes sense. And the more I heard, it all tallied with various things I'd been reading over the last few years, you know, about dieting and why it doesn't work and all of this kind of thing. And it was like everything suddenly fell into place. And I just realized, you know, I was in the right place for me, and this was a solution. And there were people there who had recovered from this addiction and, you know, were getting on with their lives. And one thing that, you know, I did realize as well, which we're told, is that abstinence doesn't equal recovery. And I think that was also the missing piece for me in the 12 step. It was all about, you know, putting down the substance, but then, and now what? How do you cope with life without your crutch? You know, and I'd had that crutch for over 50 years. And the thought of managing without it was, you know, quite scary. But because there's a community around me, I don't have to do it alone. And that's the thing that's made the biggest difference, I think, is having that, you know, unquestioning support, people who understand, people you can reach out to when you're struggling, but having that connection with other people. Because as addicts, we want to isolate. We think we ought to be able to fix it ourselves. You know, a lot of us are very self-reliant. And actually, you know, Anna talks about, you know, the biggest thing you can do is ask for help. And that doesn't come easily to someone like me, who has been very, you know, self-determined for many reasons. Yeah, I need to fix this. I should know what to do, all of that. But, you know, I can't do it on my own. And I'm just glad that there is a community out there, because there wasn't one, you know, years ago when I was suffering, there was nothing like it. And again, it's all about timing. I've just happened across it at the right time when I was, you know, ready to listen rather than just hear. And, you know, I've never looked back. I mean, it's been challenging. Don't get me wrong. I'm still an addict, you know, I still get cravings and stuff, but nowhere near the way I used to. And I don't diet. I don't weigh and measure. I'm never going to diet again. And that is a huge relief as well.
Yeah. So for me too, that the no dieting part is, you know, people always ask, isn't that so hard to not eat sugar and flour? And I'm like, honestly, it's the easiest thing that I've ever done, you know, just abstaining completely is so much easier than it ever was trying to moderate. So it actually, to me, is the easiest thing, you know, really, when I look at it, when I compare back to the dieting and all the different things I tried, it's so much easier. But you're right. I want to talk a little bit more about, like, you know, part one is just giving up the sugar and the flour and getting off your drug foods, you know, and for you and everyone that looks a little different, you know, you included grains and the oil, seed oils, all that, you know, which is huge. And then it is like, that's the crutch for so many people. Now what? I just like that. Yeah. Like, now what do I do? So what are some of your, I always say you have to have a toolkit, right? Of things like you develop this new toolkit where before it might've just been food. Now you do different things. So what are some of your like new coping, you know, strategies or tools that you use that have really kind of helped you, you think?
Well, I think one of the best things I did was early on, just after I joined SugarX, I did the first recovery accelerator program that they run, which was kind of an intensive 9-week program. At the time, it was two meetings a week. And I just got literally a whole file full of tools to use, you know, so a lot of them are around kind of plan, prepare and protect, customs, cues and consequences. There's a trigger-free triangle, lots of threes. But it's about really kind of looking at what motivates you and what you can do to help yourself. And it's very much about, you know, you figuring out the things you need to work on. So it's not one size fits all. And it's the same with the food plan. You know, there are some guidelines, but we work out what works for us. And I think one of the biggest things for me is the connection with my capability partner, because we talk about anything and everything. We have the facility on SugarX on the platform, which is called Circle to Post. It's a bit like Facebook, but private. So if you're struggling, you can post something on there. We have, you know, lots of contact with each other outside of the meetings. And it's a whole kind of, like you say, a toolbox of things that I can pick up and use and try and see what works, you know, whether it's kind of planning. Let me see. Attending a meeting, you know, running some meetings. I think one of the big things that really helped me was that they, the coaches paid for me and my capability partner and another member to go on the Gorski relapse prevention training. We call it recovery protection. And that really taught me that relapse is a process and it's not inevitable. It's about looking at what's going on earlier on, you know, kind of pulling it back to see what prompted it. Because when you put the food in your mouth, that's kind of the end of the line. It's what's going on before then to identify what your triggers might be to kind of stop it in its tracks. So I do, you know, quite a lot around that. I do plan my food. I was having real trouble with that in the beginning, because that felt like being on a diet. And it took me quite a long time. I went through a period of actually restricting without meaning to, because that's the entrenched diet mentality. But I spoke to a couple of the coaches about it, and they said, you know, this is what we think's happening. This is what you need to do. So it is really the biggest thing is asking for help and being honest with myself and with other people. You know, we have a concept of red dog and blue dog. And we talk about, you know, the dog that barks loudest is the one you feed the most. So it's all about building up our blue dog. And you can see I've got a little blue dog sitting behind me on my bookcase. And that's just a good reminder. But really, I think the biggest thing for me is the connection, is the being around other people and hearing their story, their struggles, and their successes. You know, it inspires me to kind of think, well, if they can do it, I can. And you said before about going to Italy. You know, I'd never have believed a year ago I'd be able to go to Italy, you know, the home of the carb, and not, you know, not eat the pasta, the pizza, and all of that stuff.
And the not bread, the focaccia,
oh, yeah, the bread, the gelato. I know.
The list
and everyone else around me was, you know, and I wasn't, because I planned and prepared to protect my recovery before I went. And I was determined to eat, it's another Judy phrase, no matter what, determined to eat my foods and not the trigger foods. And one thing I say to myself is, that's not my food. And the other thing I find that works for me is keeping my food very simple, because I can't bear being in the kitchen faffing about. I have to have something I can just go in the fridge and eat. So I do a lot of preparing ahead of time. And more recently, I've started planning out my food for the week. Now that I've got over myself and realised it is actually a very helpful thing to do, because then I don't have to keep thinking, oh, what am I going to eat for lunch or whatever. I think about it ahead of time. I plan. I make sure I've got the food in. I cook it. And then, you know, I commit it to my capability partner, say once a week, or whatever, I pin it up on the wall. And then when it's, you know, it comes to the date, it's like, oh, Wednesday, what's for lunch? There it is on the wall. That's what you eat. So I try not to do the debate. You know, we talk about that in Circle as well, the guilt, romance and debate. When you start doing any of those, you know, you need to just kind of get a grip and just get back on plan and, you know, do what works for you. And I think the other thing that I do all the time is try and keep it in the day, one day at a time, because if I start projecting like I used to, I was laughing with someone the other day, you know, because I think a lot of us have done it, where we planned out, if I do this and I lose 2 pounds a week by this time, you know, and it never happens. But I don't do that now, because if I think, you know, certainly at the beginning, if I thought, oh, I've got to do this for the rest of my life, I'm never going to eat X, Y, and Z again, I can't cope with that. But if I think, yeah, you're not going to eat whatever it is for today or at this meal, that's kind of more manageable. And I think the longer I've gone on without picking up the trigger foods, the easier it gets, because, you know, abstinence, I call it abstinence. I know a lot of people don't like that term, but it's shorthand for me. Abstinence feels like the norm, and I don't want to go back to where I was, because I know if I pick up a bit, I can't stop, you know. And once it's in my system again, the dopamine pathway gets triggered again. And I just, you know, I've been on that treadmill my whole life, and I've got a healthy fear of relapse, because I think, you know, there's no guarantee I'll ever get back again. So I need to hold on to my recovery now, my abstinence. It's very precious, you know. But as you said before, it's not just about being abstinent, it's about recovery. And we talk about, you know, putting down the food and getting into living. And that's what it feels like these days, actually living life rather than just existing. And, you know, some great things have happened in the past year. I mean, apart from the Italy holiday, but my husband had mental health problems quite early on after I joined SugarX. And I was doing the recovery accelerator at the time, and that really helped to get me through that period without picking up the drug foods, which was massive, because I would have been useless to him and to myself if I'd been picking up. So that was enormous. And because I'm in recovery, I've managed to reconnect with my estranged sister, who I hadn't seen for 20 odd years. And actually, I'm going down to my mum's tomorrow to meet my sister, who is going to be visiting my mum in the family home for the first time in a very long time. And we managed to reconnect, me and my sister, back in February. You know, I was very nervous about it, but I thought, well, you know, life's very short. I've only got one sister. She has a daughter that I'd never met, a husband I'd never met. And it was great, you know, and it really is kind of life beyond my wildest dreams. And it's just about trusting the process, really, but doing it with support. Can't do this by myself.
So beautifully said. Oh my gosh, I love all of that. And I think so much of your story is resonating with people listening, and I hope really giving them hope too. You know, it's never too late. And, you know, you can turn this around. And I think I always say that, like, so I've been about 4 years sugar and flour free. And I think even from then to now, there's so many more opportunities for that connection piece that you're talking about. You know, I did it on my own because I couldn't find a group that really resonated with me, but now I don't think that would be an issue. And it's why I do the podcast. Like, that's my community, my, you know, accountability piece, my connection piece. I feel well supported in so many ways now. And I just think this is the time. Like, there's just so much support for people out there. I'm just curious, we only have a few minutes left, but you said so many amazing things. But what else would you say, you know, besides the weight loss that you have experienced and that kind of more self-acceptance in your body and love, what else are the other benefits have you felt already just in this first year? And I will say, each year comes more and more and more as you heal more and more and more. But what are you noticing? What else have you noticed?
I think the biggest thing for me is the mental clarity. I'd always prided myself on my brain. And then when I went through menopause and the hysterectomy and the brain injury, I thought, you know, my memory and my ability to think quickly were gone forever. And now I realize actually it was the sugar and the carbs and that brain fog. And, you know, I'm learning, I speak three languages, and I'm learning Italian at the moment, hence the trip to Italy. And I've noticed that my recall of the vocabulary is much better than it used to be. So, you know, I can really tell that's made a difference. And also physically, I'm in much less pain. I didn't used to be able to walk for more than about 10 minutes without having to sit down. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago in Italy, I was on the go all day, like 12 hours a day for 3 days in a row. I could never have done that, you know, this time last year. I was just a wreck. And it's just, I don't know, energy. I've got more energy than I ever used to have. It's like I'm finding myself again, like my younger self again, you know, that I wish I had been when I was actually younger. But I feel better in myself now than I have done for decades. I'm lighter than I have been for 30 years, you know, and it's just feeling more present in life and, you know, taking an interest in other people, what's going on around me, rather than thinking about what can I eat, when can I eat it. You know, I'm a lot less angry than I used to be. I seem to have a bit more patience, relatively. I've never been a particularly patient person, but just I feel calmer generally. And I don't know if that's the acceptance. I'm a lot less judgmental about other people. I think I have a bit more compassion because I have more compassion for myself. And I have a bit more for other people now, you know, who are struggling. And I just really want to help other people who are still struggling with this and just, you know, let them know that there is hope. And, you know, like we've been saying, it's never too late. And the rewards, you know, the friendships and the love and acceptance that I've received over the last year are just, you know, incomparable compared to anything I might want to put in my mouth, you know, so much more nourishing and satisfying, really.
I love that. And now what I love too is that you're running some groups on SugarX around connection. So I think that's so powerful too. I know for me, a big motivator was if I can ever help myself, I really want to help other people, you know, and that I think is such a gift too, when you're able to, yeah, actually help other people, which you are now doing. So yeah, I think that's such a big, big piece of this all. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a great interview. I thank you for your vulnerability. I mean, it is like, I just remember when I first did my podcast, I'm like, am I really going to put this out there? Yes. But I think that we can all learn, you know, so much when we can be just authentic and vulnerable. And, you know, I know so many people, this is going to mean a lot to them. So is there just anything maybe that we didn't get talked to today, or just any last words of advice or like a takeaway for people listening today that you'd like to share?
I think I would just say, you know, never give up hope, and just do it. You never know what rewards you're going to get until you try. And if I can do it, anybody can.
Yeah, I always say that too. I'm like, I was like the most addicted person in the world. If I can, and I think we all feel like that, you know. So, well, thank you again so much, Karen. I'm excited because next month we're going to have your capability partner, Tiffany, on here to share her story too. So, so, so grateful. And thank you again so much for sharing your story today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Siobhan.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.